Born from the real-world needs of Resolve Marine, the Resolve Maritime Academy offers unmatched training for maritime or marine, firefighting, safety, and resource management. Our courses are taught by active professionals, providing hands-on experience that goes beyond industry standards. Whether you need STCW, USCG, or MCA certification, Resolve Academy will prepare you to mitigate emergencies, saving property and lives. Training as real as it gets, with real-world scenarios and live-action simulations. Push your limits, bring out your inner hero, and become an indispensable member of your team. Resolve Maritime Academy, where real-world training meets real-life expertise.
Hi, and welcome to Yachting Canada, presented by Yachting International Radio. I'm your host, Adam Langley, with Super Yacht East Coast, and my lovely co-host, Amanda Langley, also with Super Yacht East Coast. And we're here to continue bringing the stories of all the reasons why you should make Canada your next yachting destination. And today, we are thrilled to have with us our special guest, Dennis Campbell, who knows so much about Canada and Atlantic Canada and our part of the world that he was been obsessed with it for years. He founded his own company, a tour company that called Ambassadors, and he has been a fixture of the tourism industry in our region. I would say a leader of many opportunities across our province in our region. Someone we have a great deal of time for. We love meeting with Dennis and sharing our experiences. And I just have to give a little bit of a poke here today because we're in this amazing location here on the Halifax waterfront.
You can see it in the background here.
We set up in front of the window here to give you a bit of a sense of this incredible location. And in fact, we're in my old office. Dennis, you stole my office. I think we'll get into that a little bit more as we talk about a bit of our collective history. But first, just to give you a bit of a finer point on Dennis's work, Ambassadors is a large land and water sightseeing company, works across Nova Scotia and Atlantic Canada, the largest in the region, and does incredible tours presenting the culture and the living history and the experiences of our region. And Dennis, no one else better than yourself to talk about your company a little bit more. Why don't you give us a bit more background on Ambassadors? And you're not wearing your kilt today. Maybe you can.
No, I should have. I'll run out and put it on later on.
No, but we're all very coordinated. We all wore Navy. And we didn't talk about it.
There was a dress code.
Listen, thanks. Thrilled to be here. Always enjoy hanging with you guys. But this is really a cool experience to be able to talk about what we all know and love. And, you know, I like to say, if you love what you do, you never work another day in your life, right?
I wish that felt true some days.
there are those days. Yeah, for sure. Ambassadors, this is a company that I started back in high school.
That's crazy.
Well, I started it. It was more ignorance than anything. But my youngest of three sisters, who's 10 years older than me, one day when I was 7 years old, she was 17. She got a call from her boss on her day off saying that it's an emergency. You got to go do this bus tour from the Westin Nova Scotia Hotel. To which she said, I'm babysitting my little brother. To which her boss said, well, take him with you, put him at the back of the bus and tell him to sit there and be quiet, be good.
And you were seven.
Seven.
Yeah. Dennis, you can't sit and be quiet.
No, but I was able to go to the back of the bus anyway. But no, you're right. I couldn't be quiet. Actually, at the end of the day, not kidding, my sister said, okay, you know, come on up and say goodbye to everyone. And so she gave me the microphone and I just said goodbye. Well, then everyone was coming off the bus and started handing her gratuities. And it was that third little old lady that handed her a dollar and then handed me a dollar. And at 7 years old, you get handed a dollar. Well,
It's impressionable.
So I just looked at the dollar. And of course, with the dollar in my hand, all of a sudden another dollar and more change. And I needed two hands. And I was couldn't figure out why were they doing this.
And you became addicted to it.
Yeah, legend was born.
I don't know. Well, but it was at that very moment that I learned one of life's most important lessons. I learned at 7 years old that little old ladies have a lot of money.
That's true.
It really communicates the value of the experience that was being delivered through that tour. And I think that speaks to you can build on this, the authenticity of our...
That's what I was saying, having a child on board, that's real life. That's
right.
Authentic.
Yeah. And the people all, very, very friendly people, seem to really and joy. It was a great, great for everyone. And anyway, just so that's where it started.
So when did Ambassadors actually start?
So Ambassadors was almost 10 years later. I was actually technically 16. And I started it as a company called Halifax City Guide Service.
Okay.
Just a step on tour guides to go on the visiting motor coaches from all over North America to take people around the city and Peggy's Cove and Lunenburg and so on. But I found that that name was a little limiting. So I decided to change the name, and I knew I wanted an A name because
you're talking to the A team here. So we understand.
Yeah, you guys are. You absolutely are. But I really believe, like, you know, especially you're starting out, having an A name gives you a step up.
There you go.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, because I would ask people, you know, how do phone books. Yeah, exactly. But I would say to people, you know, how do you find us? They said, well, we went down through the list the others, you know, and I said, so we're H, Halifax City Guide Service. They said, yeah, we called these other ones and left messages, haven't heard back. I'm like, I got to get myself an A name.
Interesting.
So when you started on this journey, or telling the story of Halifax, the landscape of our city, which is the capital city of Nova Scotia, now has a population around 500,000 people, a very different landscape today. In case in point, the Halifax waterfront, which we'll get into a little bit more detail, but it's evolved dramatically over the last decade. So with that, the experiences, the expectation of visitors, the number of visitors, even moving into more elevated visitors, and that comes to the super yacht sector, is increasingly visiting the city of Halifax and the province of Nova Scotia. So just talk to us a little bit about that journey. I mean, you've been through it, through the business and through your personal interests in the waterfront. Tell us a bit about what that looked like.
Yeah, no, happy to. You know, when I think back as a kid, you wouldn't walk away Halifax waterfront. You know, it was scary and it was very dilapidated and so on. And then you think of, you know, over the years, the transformation is spectacular. I like to say to people that, you know, cruise ships and super yachts built this waterfront. I mean, really, truly. But in fact, the truth is you and your team built this waterfront.
It was a big team, and it was private and public sector. And it's the little jab I was giving Dennis earlier. In my former career, working with Waterfront Developments, which is the Crown Corporation of the province of Nova Scotia, operated out of this office for over a decade with an incredible team. And working, Dennis was a tenant, one of our larger tenants, and demonstrated the importance of our partnerships and collaboration and working together to build the experience of a destination. And so collectively, it is all of our opportunity and responsibility to work together to, to that end. So looking out this window today in 2024, it's incredibly hard to imagine that this scene could have looked quite differently. It could have been a four-lane freeway that was imagined to be constructed in the 1970s to feed the commercial container pier at the south end of our city. So much like Boston, which spent a decade undoing the wrongs of infrastructure. And if those folks on listening to the podcast are familiar with Toronto and the Gardiner Expressway, which separates the downtown from the waterfront, that type of infrastructure, you know, back in the day, is, you know, the root cause of a lot of challenges in developing the city. So luckily, a group of very forward-thinking people stood up and said, no, we can't have the waterfront opportunity diminished by a freeway. So that was set aside, not before they developed a significant, massive piece of infrastructure called the Cogswell Interchange, which they're now taking down. Right. And that is there's a rebirth of almost a 10-building neighborhood that, you know, a large section of the city is being reconnected. So if we look out, you know, the window here today, and if we were to walk the waterfront, what was in the 70s, as Dennis mentioned, a series of dilapidated and undesirable, falling apart wharves, harkening back to when all the goods in the province were largely moved by ship. Mm-hmm. Once that transportation moved to road, these assets were no longer needed, fell in disrepair. Long story short, thankfully, now, through thoughtful partnerships, both in the public and private sector, the waterfront has been preserved and developed. And we're experiencing a major renaissance of the city, I think, through the waterfront.
Yeah, we really are. And, you know, you think about this waterfront, I'd put it up against any waterfront in Canada or even North America. It's really one of the top waterfronts. And when visitors come here, they walk this waterfront, it's a wow. It's a total wow. You know, shops, boutiques, pubs, taverns, restaurants.
Because walking the waterfront, the boardwalk spans the whole, almost the whole entire, you know, downtown core.
Yeah.
And so you're really immersed in it.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, everything that you would want is within walking distance.
Right. And it's so diverse. There's something for everyone. It's, and you know, the festivals and events and so on. But to watch the transformation over the years was just spectacular. And then to see, you know, the government public money was sort of what got it going. But then it was, you know, the private investment followed, as proofed by this $200 million right here.
Yeah, and you live there, so you live on the waterfront. You work and play down here.
Yeah, yeah, and I was so happy that I didn't have to pay $200 million here.
But I think you really nailed it on the head that the waterfront is inclusive. It has something for everyone. We work in a industry that often gets stereotyped as not accessible, and now mind you, not everyone can afford, you know, multi-million-dollar boats, but that's doesn't mean that boating is not accessible. So we think of everything from stand-up paddleboards to super yachts and everything in between. Whatever gets you on the water is what we're about promoting. There is a significant opportunity for places like Nova Scotia to attract high yield visitors, and these visitors have, you know, smaller footprints when it comes to spaces they occupy, but they're spending ashore is exponentially more than some of their other visitors to an area. So I think having a mix of, and it actually attracts, you know, people to the waterfront. You know, they help a working waterfront, even though this is not what you would say, it's just a traditional working waterfront, not commercial fishery and containers and whatnot, but it's still working in the tourism space.
Oh, yeah.
And it's working in the building of a neighborhood space. And I think that's what over the last decade has really changed the feel and the environment of the waterfront, with people living, people visiting, people playing all in this space, and people working in this space.
But it still hasn't lost its authenticity. So there's still, you know, you can talk a little bit about the wharves that people tie up to here. I mean, we're not talking about some of the wharves that super yachts traditionally
is amazing. So this building that we're in right now is on the end of a 300-foot wharf called the Cable Wharf. And it's over 100 years old, and rightly so. Cable Wharf was named for the cable ships that operated from here, laying the transatlantic cable. And now it's been famous for other incidents as well. And it's connected with the Titanic, the Mackie Bennett, and the many other cable ships brought, unfortunately, the victims through here, the closest port to the Titanic disaster to deal with the aftermath. But it's
tours at
my time at the Maritime Museum. Yeah. I confess I worked for several years at the Maritime Museum next door, which is another treasure of this waterfront. But I think to Amanda's point, we are on some respects on some ancient infrastructure that's been reinvested in, and you would be familiar with that. You operate from the site with your tours.
And also I've heard that the Cable Wharf is actually really one of the most historically significant wharfs in the country. When you think of connecting to Europe, the communications, the Titanic, and so on. So certainly a spectacular wharf for sure.
Well, you're safe here because it's very well constructed. Had to facilitate those massive cable spools that were brought through here. Talk to us a bit about your work, Dennis, and how it aligns with our collective efforts to build marine tourism and awareness of Atlantic Canada as a destination for recreational boating, for large yachts, for luxury crews. Within that, you know, as we look to attract investment in infrastructure, we're also building for local people first, and the local people become the attraction that attracts the visitor. But just give us a sense of where you see marine tourism going. You have a great history having helped build the cruise industry, and you're working in this space. But how can we attract more support and to grow the opportunity here to grow marine tourism?
It's a bit of a loaded question. It's like five questions in one.
Yeah, it's really about. Yeah, no. You can take part of the question, whichever part you feel comfortable answering. But I think really the crux of it is, almost every visitor that comes to Nova Scotia is a marine tourist because they're coming for the coastal experience.
Yeah.
But there seems to be a bit of a disconnect between marine tourism and land-based tourism. And so how do we create better recognition of Marine Corps to get the support to grow it?
Great question. So, I like to say that our number one asset in this city is without a doubt our harbor. I mean, absolutely, no one would ever dispute that. I think a number one asset for Nova Scotia is our ocean. And we are Canada's ocean playground, as seen on our license plates. And we're never more than, 35 miles from the ocean. But from our point of view, our job is to create that authentic experience. And, I say to all of our staff, of which we have a little over 300, working throughout Atlantic Canada, I say to them every year, I say it at the beginning, I say it several times when I see people, our staff, and I always say at the end of the season, and I'll never stop saying this, and that is that we are so fortunate to have the privilege to create vacation dreams.
Yeah.
And I say, when I say that, it's funny, I say, I know it might to some sound corny.
No.
But it is.
I live in corny. That's where I'm tapped, yes.
Yeah, no. but really, I say, think about how incredibly fortunate we are to live in this part of the world, which has just so much beauty. And we get the honor of, creating the vacation dreams. And I say, there's people that are coming here that this is their first time. They may have saved for 10 years to come here. They may have saved their whole lives. Or, if they didn't have to save, they'll say, my grandmother or my grandfather told me about the beauty of Nova Scotia, the Bay of Fundy or Peekskill or Anna Green Gables or BEI or what have you. You hear these things all the time and they're like, this is a life dream for me to come here and to experience this. And so I'm like, to our team, I'm like, folks, you got to get it right. You gotta be on. You can't have a bad day.
Right.
If you're having a bad day, leave it at home.
Yeah.
And I said, you as a tour guide, in one tour, can absolutely make their entire vacation if you give of yourself. And so I would say, critical that you come out of the gate really strong, and you just start that tour off on a high, and you let the people set the expectation, let them know you are gonna give them the best tour you possibly can, and then give it. The rest of the day is easy when you do that,
yeah,
as compared to starting low and trying to work your way up. It takes the whole day to do it.
Yeah.
So you start strong and make that experience a wow. And like, it just works. It's magic.
It's funny you say that, because it's not lost on us too that we get to shape some of the marine visitors who come here and their trip and their itinerary, and what a privilege that is.
It is.
So we get to show them, within what their interests are, this amazing place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And for us, we do the gamut of the really, really the biggest of ships, right down to the very, very small, high-end luxury lines. And of course, when it comes to yachts, that's where we send them over to you guys, because you guys do that so well. But
do customized experiences.
Yeah. Oh, it's absolutely. And it really works. But it's so cool to see again that whole market blossoming. And it's like, where is this going to go? It's certainly going in the right direction.
Yeah. So I think that really speaks to the requirement for collaboration.
Yeah.
That's sometimes that's difficult in our little part of the world, where sometimes people kind of keep things to themselves. And I heard an interview you had done recently where I think you were asked something along the lines of, do you work with other companies? And you're like, of course we do. If they do a good job, we want to work with me more. But if they don't.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what we say. It's funny. Lots of new entrepreneurs start businesses along the waterfront, and they all come to us, not sure if we're a friend or foe. And we're very clear about that. We're like, listen, if you're a good operator, call us anytime. We're happy to help. If you don't raise the bar, you don't, help grow the industry, make it better, don't call us, because we've dealt with bad competitors in the past. We don't have time for that. But when they hear that, they really appreciate it, because it's like, okay, so the door's open, and we create the bigger pie together.
Right. So it really is that rising tide that lifts all boats.
It is.
We run into that with us too, with our business, is we don't, there's a certain level of expectation that our customers demand.
Yeah.
And so you don't, you want everybody to be elevating what they're doing to a certain standard.
And at the same time, you cannot accommodate all their needs on your own.
No.
You need to build a team, and whether it's a formal team within your company or a team within your network,
yeah,
or a team within the industry, building marine tourism, and for focused on the building the luxury market and the superyacht sector, that is absolutely critical that we have in place partners and stakeholders that understand the opportunity and see themselves in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the stage we find ourselves having proven through, you know, the number one most visited destination in probably Atlantic Canada, the Halifax waterfront, mm-hmm. is becoming a number one Atlantic Canadian destination for yachts. Mm-hmm. And as they come through this experience, if they're made aware of the next one, and the next one makes mm-hmm. them aware of the next one, then you are in fact building this marine destination network. And then we just need a dentist in every port.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you know this number off the top of your head, but how many visitors do you have through all of your tours on an annual basis?
Yeah. So we right now carry just under 300,000 passengers.
Wow.
But again, the cruise ship would be the biggest part of that.
Right.
But we also have our various vessels on the Halifax waterfront, our amphibious vessels. So we've got six of those. We've got 3 200 passenger vessels. And it sounds, you know, companies come to us and they think, oh, you guys just do the mass production. Like, we have a team in our cruise shorts that do nothing but the super high end. They stop with the yachts because we don't know it like you guys do. And so it did again with that collaboration of help sending business yeah. back and forth.
Yeah, but we've spoke before about what we don't like is when we bring a visitor to a port and they end up not knowing what to do, or right. there's no ground transportation to get there,
yeah.
or you have to take them out of the port. We want right. them to enjoy the place yeah. that they're in.
Yeah.
And so then explore from there. And so there's all sorts of opportunities here for, you know, private tours. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this in the past. George's mm-hmm. Island is mm-hmm. one of them.
Yeah.
McNabb's Island. And they're all just right here in the harbor.
Absolutely.
And then not even to get into all of the stuff that's on land that's, you know, close here, like the Titanic grave sites and right. the Citadel. Alexander Graham Bell. We just kind of just trying to keep breath.
Right.
But Alexander Keith.
Yeah.
I mean, all these things can be incorporated into a private, you know, tour.
100%. Yeah. And, you know, we do many sort of high-end hub and spoke out of Halifax because, as you know, the superyachts will come and stay for several weeks.
Right.
So, you know, it's not uncommon to take people down to Piggy's Cove, which is, you know, one of our iconic products, but to do a really high-end experience, Piggy's Cove. We just did one recently where we had a small group of 8 that we took out on a fishing boat and had John Campbell, no relation, but good friends. But John, who owns the restaurant out of Piggy's Cove, who, you know, gave them the interpretive of the behind the scenes of the way life is at Piggy's Cove. Well, we're out there hand lining for fish and the mackerel were biting like crazy. And we had a little induction ceremony where we inducted them into the age old order of the Southwestern. And they down and an ounce of rum and had the fish on ring, Southwestern hats on. And then we went back in. And he took us to Lighthouse and actually showed us something really cool that I can't actually see on camera because we weren't allowed to go there. But anyway, forget that.
But for those who are listening who don't know what Peggy's Cove is, if you've seen a picture of a lighthouse from Nova Scotia, it's Peggy's Cove. It's
yeah.
iconic.
Yeah.
It's on, you know, rock. Really rugged coastline, but the actual village is so charming.
Oh, it is. Yeah. No, and afterwards we went into the restaurant for a fresh lobster dinner, and we had live entertainment for the group right at the table. It's very, very authentic maritime.
So you just nailed it. That is what we deliver as luxury.
Yeah, yes. That's it.
Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't get more authentic than a couple, you know, passionate local people that are not on a sort of a, you know, record speed.
Yeah, right.
I've said this 1,000 times.
Yeah.
It just, and those are the people that we seek out or even find us often. I had an email yesterday from a itinerary planner in Newfoundland who is looking to understand what we're doing and thinks it's very exciting that she can imagine what she could bring on the table. So yeah. It's that network of people.
Yeah.
that is as important as the network of infrastructure. And what would you say if, because there are still a lot of stereotypes and misperceptions about Nova Scotia, Atlantic Canada's destination, some of them are rooted in that we don't have the infrastructure to support visiting yachts, or we don't have enough itinerary, or we're too far away from, you know, New England and Maine, which is, you know, you could almost throw hit a rock
if you're right
in Yarmouth. So how would you respond to the attitude that we're not market ready?
You know, that's interesting. I would, you know, really kind of disagree with the comment, only because, you know, all you have to do is talk to anyone who's been here, experienced it, and they're like, this place is really special. And, you know, although, like, we only really operate 23 ports in Atlantic Canada.
I say only
because you guys would be every little tiny study port. And some of those 23 are very small, but, you know, again, I've not come across a single, guest who's not, you know, who's gone away, who didn't say it was a wow experience. It was wonderful, worth it. So, you know, I think the infrastructure is growing, and but is there enough? Well, it's always a chicken or egg, and you know, there needs to be more for sure. But it's also neat to see like some of these super yachts that they'll pull into Lunenburg and they'll get some significant work done in one of the yards in Nova Scotia, which there's several that can do that kind of work. And then they'll fly up, meet their yacht, and it's all ready to go. But they're paying Canadian dollars for the work to be done on the yachts. It makes so much sense. Just,
so glad you brought that up, Dennis. It's often something we bring up in the conversation that some of our guests wouldn't have the as intimate experience with maintenance as you might, because you have this privilege of owning a bunch of ships and for boats, which boats, you know, break out another 1,000 is the, you know, the acronym.
And the boss pull up the bus.
This would be some of the fleet.
These are Dennis's bosses.
So Dennis, you're, you know, very familiar with ship repair and maintenance. And again, so happy you brought that up, because we do have the marine trades and the facilities. Mm-hmm. And there's many that are recently been changed ownership and have been investing and improving their services and their platform to do maintenance. So maybe just from your perspective of owning a fleet of ships and having work done in Atlantic Canada on these vessels, you can kind of for our audience, especially those captains out there, know that we do have, now, managing expectations is absolutely critical. So can everything be facilitated? No, but what we can do, we do very, very well.
True.
And making sure that you know what that is critical.
Yeah. I mean, as you folks well know, the our marine history, needing ships for fishing, you know, has created these shipyards that today we have such a benefit to us as a sightseeing operator with, you know, nine commercial vessels that we need to have, you know, maintained and repaired and up out of the water. And, you know, there's shipyard, you know, right out that way, not too far. And Sambro, that is great, but it's not that far down to Lunenburg or up to Pictou, and, just down to Shelburne and over to Metagan. And up Cape Breton, there's so many good options, and they're good yards. They do good work. And like you say, the new owners, very excited about the new owners in Lunenburg, because they have proven they know what they're doing. They're young, they're hardworking, they're aggressive, and they're attracting these super yachts to be maintained, which is really cool.
Might be helping with that. But at the same time, what an incredible environment for a shipyard to be located in a UNESCO World Heritage community, Lunenburg. So you're getting your work done while you feel like you're living in a postcard.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, some of the yachts that we've helped come through Lunenburg for having work done, they weren't sure about being in a small rural community at first, because they didn't think there was going to be enough to keep their crew happy.
Right.
And happy crews are really important to maintain.
Yeah.
You would know you have a crew of 300.
Yeah.
But they were just blown away by the access to nature, the cuisine in the town, the proximity to Halifax, proximity to the airport. So all these things are really important in building a destination. But maybe let's just dial it back to Halifax. And we have, again, just such a shared history of developing this waterfront. And, you know, our kids growing up on Halifax Harbor. For many, many years, the audience wouldn't know this, but the harbor was polluted. We had, unfortunately, the city's sewage was going into the harbor. And that is a challenge around rural parts of Atlantic Canada. These things are progressively being cleaned up. But the incredible story of the Halifax Harbor cleanup, I think in its absence, we wouldn't be here having this conversation.
Yeah. Right. Clean that.
Right. Yeah. So Halifax as destination for your guests, whether they're coming by land or sea, for guests coming on cruise, for guests coming in yachts, there's a lot to do. We've talked about it, but what we haven't talked about, and I think what's really, really fun, and we've seen this over the years, is the amount of access to recreation and entertainment for crew.
Yeah, it's true. Especially in Halifax.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about Halifax.
So more buyers per capita than anywhere North
world,
America or
the world.
It's more now.
Yeah, I mean, there's some people dispute it with St. John's, Newfoundland, saying we're second.
Another very fun community.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are both great options.
Yeah, though. Yeah.
I think what's so great about, and we said this earlier in our conversation, but you're steps away from everything.
Totally.
Bars, galleries, restaurants. I mean, amazing restaurants. Yeah.
All ambassador stores.
Provisioning. There's so much to experience just within steps from where you'd be birthed.
There really is. And you know, too, I mean, again, it might sound cliche, but it's very true. The Maritimers, Atlantic Canadians, people are lovely people. It's all in our nature to be welcoming. And so, you know, you hear that all the time is, I can't believe how nice you people are. And, you know, again,
you don't know how to be anything else.
Right. Yes. Yeah. 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 So no, it's good. And like you say, there's just so many choices, so many options. It's, you know, that's often the challenge. People come here and they're like, I didn't have time to do it all.
Yeah.
Yet we do hear from the big cruise lines, especially in saying, we as a company and we as a destination need to keep reinventing ourselves because believe it or not, we've heard this from two of the major lines, and we heard it really from all of them, but two of them say that the number one repeat destination, cruise destination on the planet is Canada and New England. So that right out there. They tell us, they say, well, you know, you ask why that is. They say, well, the world's largest moneyed population is the New York tri-state region, and they can drive to a cruise ship so they can avoid a flight. And when they come here, it delivers. Canada is a foreign country for American friends and visitors. And it's, you know, that foreign country with the different cultures and so on. We're the same, but different and different enough that it delivers and they like it, but they're like, okay, they're going to only go to Piggy's Cove once, maybe twice.
Right.
Then they want to do something else. Well, there's so much more. There's Morro Bay, Lunenburg, Oak Island. My gosh.
I think that's where we come in is that, I mean, if you were to come here and you were just doing research on, you know, Google or YouTube, it would get overwhelming on what to do and how far it is away from, like, people get confused about distances. I know, you know, people come into Yarmouth and be like, okay, we'll be there in an hour.
Yeah.
You're like, the province is small, but.
But it's still a 9-hour drive from one end to the other.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, there's so much to do. Even people are amazed that we have wineries here.
Right.
You know, you can go to some of the warmest beaches north of the Carolinas and a fishing village.
Right.
And you can go to a city like this because there's so much to see.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. Like, you know, the fact that, like, people like you have great beaches and they're actually warm water. And we're like, yeah, like, you know, an hour from here, warmest waters in north of the Carolinas, which is incredible. And you just have to go and experience it. Or an hour from here, you know, the Bay of Fundy, the world's highest tides and all that spectacular, that delivers. You know, it's pretty cool. And wineries, we don't, you know, just have wineries. We have wineries that are truly world class.
Award winning,
world class. And the, like, my sister, who used to live very close to Napa Valley, you know, we were down in the Annapolis Valley, again, less than an hour from here, recently. And we were sitting there at, Luckett's Vineyards. And she said, this is nicer than any vineyard setting in all, you know,
they've
California.
Done an amazing job with creating that experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it is spectacular.
And they've done so by just inviting the local landscape into the presence of their facility.
Yeah.
It's like, you didn't have to, there's no smoke and mirrors here. This is just what we have.
I remember when wineries first started, really, people started paying attention. and the first kind of great tour went down, and they would take like a white van and you know, 8 to 10 people would go down and do it. There'd only be a couple wineries.
Oh yeah.
And you do tastings now.
Oh.
I mean, the amount of people that go down there on tours and on their own.
Oh yeah.
Well, you do, you incorporate local products into your tours. You have the wine and waters tour.
Oh yeah.
You've got craft beer tours. And so I think that's, you know, you should be commended for that, because some operators just go generic, and if I'm showing up on, without no disrespect to Budweiser, but if I'm going on a tall ship in Halifax Harbor, I probably want a craft beer.
Craft beer, nice for sure. Right? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, thanks for saying that. I have to tell you, I can't take credit for it. Like, we truly are blessed with spectacular people. And, you know, that's our greatest asset.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I've noticed that over the years, like from starting a company from scratch so many years ago and watching the progression, the more quality people you get, the easier it is to attract quality people. It's like, you know, from good stuff comes good stuff, and it gets better and better and better. And it's like, it's just so nice to watch.
Keep surrounding yourself with people smarter than you. That's
That's it. Every day I get out and who's
going to find this smarter than me? I'll take that compliment. Yeah. So I have a question. If we had a yacht, they're in the yacht, the other side of...
there's a couple of yachts here.
Yeah.
You just can't see them. If they walked into this boardroom right now and we were working with them and we said, Dennis, we have the whole afternoon and evening. Where should we go? What should we do?
Okay. First thing I'd say...
Money's no object. And the the timing is, it has to be today.
Okay. Well, first thing I do is say, let's crack open some beers.
Yes.
We give them a Nova Scotia craft beer cider. We have those.
Planted beers.
Yeah. And then, of course, of course. And then you do, you know, obviously you want to explore, you know, what is their interest.
Yeah.
But if you said, you know, money's no option, I would gravitate towards like some of the things we've done whereby we say, would you like to be helicoptered to, Sable Island, for example, you know, which is, you know, the graveyard of the Atlantic, but it is such a spectacular place, and you just don't know until you're there just how special it is.
Have you been?
You know what? I haven't, but I've talked to several people that have.
It's like that is bucket list.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wild pony.
Yeah. Seals.
Definitely good one. Box to check, Dennis, number one.
Yes.
That's a good one.
We'll all go after this.
Exactly. I actually was booked to go years ago and unfortunately had to cancel. So we'd all get back to it.
Yeah.
But you know, again, you talk to anyone that ever does that and they were like, yeah, that was definitely a bucket list item. And it's, you know, you gotta do it, you gotta experience it. Another really great one. Again, I don't mean to just put everyone in helicopters here, but we have no budget. So, you know, So the other one is, of course, anytime we've taken folks up to Cabot Links, Cabot Cliffs, again, it's just a complete wow because, you know, right here in the province, we have, you know, two of the top courses in Canada and, you know, one of the top 10 in the world in Cabot Links, Cabot Cliffs. So, you know, that's pretty special. And, and those are only two of many other great, spectacular golf courses. So, but you can helicopter up there.
Sure.
Get a game of golf in and be back here if you want to. Or maybe you want to spend a night or two up there because, as you guys know, this, what's better than Cape Breton? It's magical.
It's pretty magical,
Yeah. And you really shouldn't leave Cape Breton without going to a Kaylee, right? You know, the entertainment and the wholesome experience of a Kaylee is a must experience. It really is.
Yeah, music is all over that island.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Dennis, look, I think we could talk all day. I know we could. But it's been an absolute pleasure having you here, or having us here in your office, my office, here today on the Halifax waterfront, and you know, sharing some of your experiences and stories with us here today. I just want to get on the boat, go exploring, or on one of your tours,
especially
the elevated ones that are only accessible by helicopter.
This is our first interview that's kind of featuring Halifax, and I don't think that there's a better person to think of how many people you welcome here.
Oh, thank you.
For this to be our first interview for Halifax.
I am totally honored. I really am. And this has been great fun. I always love hanging with you guys anyway, but this is a neat experience. It's so fun to talk about the possibilities and get the word out there to people to come and, you know, see it and experience it for themselves and to be able to say, I would say people would go away from being here saying they, even as much as they said, you can't get it until you experience it.
Right. It's hard to put into words. I think we find that a challenge too. It's a feeling.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I think you evoked this one of our interviews. I think it was somewhere at the Palm Beach Boat Show last winter, and you said people come here and they feel like they've come home.
Yeah.
And whenever you even say that, it still gives me kind of
they can be from anywhere in the world, but when they feel like they're at home, there's an ease that comes from being here and in these wow worthy landscapes.
Right.
It can still feel very, you know, welcoming.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's really a big part of the reason why it's such a major repeat destination, because people have a taste and they would like more.
Yeah. And I know whether visitors are coming by land or by sea, if they're not armed with the information they need to really create the, you know, maximize their time here, they're going to come thinking that it's going to stay a couple days. And this has happened in many of the cases with yachts we've worked with. They leave several weeks later because we're continuing to enrich their itinerary. And not everybody has that luxury. So the more we can make people aware of what's here, the better they can plan and prepare. That's when you need to contact Dennis Campbell and Ambassadors who look after your tour needs. It's been a great pleasure having you here again today. Thank you to my co-host, Amanda. Thank you to Yachting International Radio. This is Yachting Canada, presented by Super Yacht East Coast. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks,
everybody.
Time.